You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. Chapter 5. Biology and Belief. In 1952, a young British physician made a serious mistake. It was a mistake that was to bring short-lived scientific glory to Dr. Albert Mason. Mason tried to treat a 15-year-old boy's warts using hypnosis. Mason and other doctors had successfully used hypnosis to get rid of warts, but this was an especially tough case. The boy's leathery skin looked more like an elephant hide than a human's, except for his chest, which had normal skin. Mason's first hypnosis session focused on one arm. When the boy was in a hypnotic trance, Mason told him that the skin on that arm would heal and turn into healthy pink skin. When the boy came back a week later, Mason was gratified to see that the arm looked healthy. But when Mason brought the boy to the referring surgeon, who had unsuccessfully tried to help the boy with skin grafts, he learned they had made a medical error. The surgeon's eyes were wide with astonishment when he saw the boy's arm. It was then that he told Mason that the boy was suffering not from warts, but from a lethal genetic disease called congenital ichthyosis. By reversing the symptoms using only the power of the mind, Mason and the boy had accomplished what had until that time been considered impossible. Mason continued the hypnosis sessions with the stunning result that most of the boy's skin came to look like the healthy pink arm that resulted after the first hypnosis session. The boy, who had been mercilessly teased in school because of his grotesque-looking skin, actually went on to lead a healthy, normal life. When Mason wrote about his startling treatment for ichthyosis in the British Medical Journal in 1952, the article created a sensation. Mason was touted in the media and became a magnet for patients suffering from the rare lethal disease that no one before had ever cured. But hypnosis was, in the end, not a cure-all. Mason tried it on a number of other ichthyosis patients, but he was never able to replicate the results that he had with the young boy. Mason attributes his failure to his own belief about the treatment. When Mason treated the new patients, he couldn't replicate his cocky attitude as a young physician, thinking he was treating a bad case of warts. After the first patient, Mason was fully aware that he was treating, that everyone in the medical establishment knew to be a congenital incurable disease. Mason tried to pretend that he was upbeat about the prognosis, but he told the Discovery Health Channel, "I was acting." How is it possible that the mind can override genetic programming, as it did in the case above? And how could Mason's belief about the treatment affect its outcome? The new biology suggests some answers to those questions. We saw in the previous chapter that matter and energy are entangled. The logical corollary is that the mind, energy, and the body, matter, are similarly bound, though Western medicine has tried valiantly to separate them for hundreds of years. In the 17th century, René Descartes dismissed the idea that the mind influences the physical character of the body. Descartes' notion was that the physical body was made out of matter and the mind was made out of an unidentified but clearly immaterial substance. Because he couldn't identify the nature of the mind, Descartes left behind an irresolvable philosophical conundrum. Since only matter can affect matter, how can an immaterial mind be connected to a material body? The non-physical mind envisioned by Descartes was popularly defined as the ghost in the machine by Gilbert Ryle 60 years ago in the book The Concept of Mind. Traditional biomedicine, whose science is based on a Newtonian matter-only universe, embraced Descartes' separation of mind and body. Medically speaking, it would be far easier to fix a mechanical body without having to deal with its meddling ghost. The reality of a quantum universe reconnects what Descartes took apart. Yes, the mind, energy, arises from the physical body, just as Descartes thought. However, our new understanding of the universe's mechanisms show us how a physical body can be affected by the immaterial mind. Thoughts, the mind's energy, directly influence how the physical brain controls the body's physiology. Thought energy can activate or inhibit the cell's function-producing proteins via the mechanics of constructive and destructive interference, described in the previous chapters. That is why, when I took the first step toward changing my life, I actively monitored where I was expending my brain's energy. I had to examine the consequences of energy I invested in my thoughts, as closely as I examined the expenditures of energy I used to power my physical body. Despite the discoveries of quantum physics, the mind-body split in Western medicine still prevails. Scientists have been trained to dismiss cases like the boy above, who had used his mind to heal a genetically mandated disease, as simply quirky anomalies. I believe, on the contrary, that scientists should embrace the study of these anomalies. Buried in exceptional cases are the roots of a more powerful understanding of the nature of life. More powerful because the principles behind these exceptions trump established truths. The fact is that harnessing the power of your mind can be more effective than the drugs you have been programmed to believe you need. The research I discussed previously found that energy is a more efficient means of affecting matter than any chemical. Unfortunately, scientists most often deny rather than embrace exceptions. My favorite example of scientific denial of the reality of the mind-body interactions relates to an article that appeared in Science about 19th century German physician Robert Koch, who along with the Pasteur founded germ theory. Germ theory holds that bacteria and viruses are the cause of disease. That theory is widely accepted now, but Koch's day it was more controversial. One of Koch's critics was so convinced that the germ theory was wrong that he brazenly wolfed down a glass of water laced with vibrio-chlorelire, the bacterium Koch believed caused cholera. To everyone's astonishment, the man was completely unaffected by the virulent pathogen. The Science article published in the year 2000 described the incident, stating, quote, "For unexplained reasons, he remains symptom-free, but nonetheless incorrect." The man survived, and science, reflecting the unanimity of opinion on the germ theory, had the audacity to say his criticism was incorrect. If it is claimed that this bacterium is the cause of cholera, and the man demonstrates that he is unaffected by the germs, how can he be incorrect? Instead of trying to figure out how the man avoided the dreaded disease, scientists blithely dismissed and other embarrassing, messy exceptions that spoil their theories. Remember the dogma that genes control biology. Here's another example in which scientists, bent on establishing the validity of their truth, ignore pesky exceptions. The problem is that there cannot be exceptions to a theory. Exceptions simply mean that the theory is not fully correct. A current example of a reality that challenges the established beliefs of science concerns the ancient religious practice of firewalking. Seekers gather together daily to stretch the realms of conventional awareness by walking across beds of hot coals. Measurement of the stone's temperature and duration of exposure are enough to cause medically relevant burns on the feet. Yet thousands of participants emerge from the process totally unscathed. Before you jump to the conclusion that the coals were not really that hot, consider the numbers of participants who waver in their beliefs and get scalded walking across the same bed of coals. Similarly, science is unambiguous about its claim that the HIV virus causes AIDS, but it has no conception as to why large numbers of individuals that have been infected with the virus for decades do not express this disease. More baffling is the reality of terminal cancer patients who have recovered their lives through spontaneous remissions. Because such remissions are outside the bounds of conventional theory, science completely disregards the fact that they ever happened. Spontaneous remissions are dismissed as unexplainable exceptions to our current truths, or simply misdiagnoses. When positive thinking goes bad. Before I go on to discuss the incredible power of our minds and how my research on cells provided insight into how the body's mind-body pathways work, I need to make it clear that I do not believe that simply thinking positive thoughts always leads to physical cures. You need to do much more than just positive thinking to harness the control of your body and your life. It is important for our health and well-being to shift our mind energy towards positive, life-generating thoughts and eliminate ever-present energy-draining and debilitating negative thoughts. But, and I mean in the biggest sense of but, the mere thinking of positive thoughts will not necessarily have any impact on our lives at all. In fact, sometimes people who flunk positive thinking become more debilitated because now they think their situation is hopeless. They believe they've exhausted all the mind-body remedies. What these positive thinking dropouts haven't understood is that the seemingly separate subdivisions of the mind, the conscious and the subconscious, are interdependent. The conscious mind is the creative one and the one that can conjure up positive thoughts. In contrast, The subconscious mind is a repository of stimulus response tapes derived from instincts and learned experiences. The subconscious mind is strictly habitual. It will play the same behavioral responses to life signals over and over again, much to our chagrin. How many times have you found yourself going ballistic over something trivial like an open toothpaste tube? You have been trained since childhood to carefully replace the cap. When you find the tube with its cap left off, your buttons are pushed, and you automatically fly into a rage. You've just experienced the simple stimulus response of a behavioral program stored in your subconscious mind. When it comes to the sheer neurological processing abilities, the subconscious mind is millions of times more powerful than the conscious mind. If the desires of the conscious mind conflict with the programs in the subconscious mind, which mind do you think will win out? You can repeat the positive affirmations that you are lovable over and over again, or that your cancer tumor will shrink. But if, as a child, you heard over and over again that you are worthless and sickly, these messages programmed into your subconscious mind will undermine your best conscious efforts to change your life. Remember how quickly your last New Year's resolution to eat less food fell by the wayside as the aroma of the baking turkey dissolved your resolve. We'll learn more about the origins of self-sabotaging and subconscious programming in future shows. Conscious parenting and how to quickly rewrite them. But for the moment, be aware that there is hope even for those of you who used positive thinking and failed at it miserably.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you're listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
Every year, countless people succumb to the temptation to purchase exotic animals like hedgehogs, lizards, monkeys, even tigers and bears to keep as pets. But life in captivity is often a death sentence for these animals, who may suffer from malnutrition, an improper environment, and the stress of confinement. For more information on this issue, visit the BCSPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenary, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We are looking at the book, The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracles by Bruce H. Lipton, PhD. We're looking now at the chapter, Biology of Belief. The next section is Mind Over Body. Let's review what we know about cells. We learned in earlier chapters that the functions of cells are directly derived from the movements of their protein gears. The movement generated by assemblies of proteins provides with physiologic functions that enable life. While proteins are the physical building blocks, complementary environmental signals are required to animate their movement. The interface between environmental signals and behavior-producing cytoplasmic proteins is the cell's membrane. The membrane receives stimuli and then engages the appropriate life-sustaining cellular responses. The cell membrane operates as the cell's brain. Integral membrane receptor efficator proteins, known as IMPs, are the fundamental physical subunits of the cellular brain's intelligence mechanism. By functional definition, these protein complexes are perception switches that link reception of environmental stimuli to response-generating protein pathways. Cells generally respond to an assortment of basic perceptions of what's going on in their world. Such perceptions include whether things like potassium, calcium, oxygen, glucose, histamine, estrogen, toxins, light, or any other number of stimuli are present in their immediate environment. The simultaneous interactions of tens of thousands of reflected perception switches in the membrane, each directly reading an individual environmental signal, collectively create the complex behavior of a living cell. For the first 3 billion years of life on this planet, the biosphere consisted of free living single cells such as bacteria, algae, and protozoans. While we have traditionally considered such life forms as solitary individuals, we're now aware that signal molecules used by individual cells to regulate their own physiologic functions when released into the environment also influence the behavior of other organisms in that environment. Signals released into the environment allow for a coordination of behavior among dispersed populations of unicellular organisms. Secreting signal molecules into the environment enhance the survival of single cells by providing them with the opportunity to live as a primitive community. The single-celled slime mold amoebas provide an example of how signaling molecules lead to community. These amoebas live a solitary existence in the soil, foraging for food. When available food in the environment is consumed, the cells synthesize an excess amount of a metabolic byproduct known as cyclic AMP, known as CAMP, much of which is released into the environment. The concentration of the released CAMP builds in the environment as other amoebas face starvation. When secreted CAMP signal molecules bind to CAMP receptors on the cell membrane of other slime mold amoebas, it signals them to activate a swarming behavior wherein the amoebas congregate and form a large multicellular slug. The slug community is the reproductive stage of the slime mold. During the famine period, the community of aging cells shares their DNA and creates the next generation of offspring. The new amoebas hibernate as inactive spores. When more food is available, the food molecules act as a signal to break the hibernation cycle, releasing a new population of single cells to start the cycle all over again. The point is that single-celled organisms actually live in a community where they share their awareness and coordinate their behaviors by releasing signal molecules into the environment. Cyclic AMP, as one of evolution's earliest forms of secreted regulatory signals that control cell behavior. The fundamental human signal molecules, e.g. hormones, neuropeptides, cytokines, growth factors that regulate our own cellular communities, were once thought to have arisen with the appearance of complex multicellular life forms. However, recent research has revealed that primitive single-celled organisms were already using these human signal molecules in the earliest stages of their evolution. Through evolution, cells maximized the number of IMP awareness proteins their membranes could hold. To acquire more awareness and therefore increase their probability of surviving, cells started to assemble first into simple colonies and later to highly organized cellular communities. As described earlier, the physiological functions of multicellular organisms are parceled out to specialized communities of cells forming the body's tissues and organs. In communal organizations, the cell's membrane intelligence processing is carried out by the specialized cells of the organism's nervous and immune systems. It was only 700 million years ago, recent in regard to the time frame of the life of this planet, when single cells found it advantageous to join together into tightly knit multicellular communities, organizations we recognize as animals and plants. The same coordinating signal molecules used by free-living cells were used in these newly evolved closed communities. By tightly regulating the release and distribution of these function-controlling signal molecules, the community of cells would be able to coordinate their functions and act as a single life form. In the more primitive multicellular organisms, those without specialized nervous systems, the flow of these signal molecules within the community provided an elementary mind, represented by the coordinating information shared by every cell. In such organisms, each cell directly read environmental cues and personally adjusted their own behaviors. However, when cells came together in community, a new poetic had to be established. In community, each cell cannot act as an independent agent that does whatever it wants. The term community implies that all of its members commit to a common plan of action. In multicellular animals, individual cells may see the local environment outside of their own skin, but they may have no awareness of what is going on in more distant environments, especially those outside of the whole organism itself. Can a liver cell buried in your viscera, responding to its local environmental signals, make an informed response regarding the consequences of a mugger that jumps into your environment? The complex behavior controls needed to ensure a multicellular organization's survival are incorporated within its centralized information processing system. As more complex animals evolved, specialized cells took over the job of monitoring and organizing the flow of behavior regulating such molecules. These cells provided a distributed nerve network and central information processor, a brain, if you like. The brain's function is to coordinate the dialogue of signal molecules within the community. Consequently, in a community of cells, each cell must acquiesce control of the informed decisions of its awareness authority, the brain. The brain controls the behavior of the body's cells. This is a very important point to consider as we blame our cells of our organs and tissues for the health issues that we are experiencing in our lives. We're going to be looking at this and many other very interesting subtopics within this very interesting book, The Biology of Belief. And so please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
Listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
We are diverse, independent, and yours. CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.